Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Nartrees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Merriam-Webster's Handbook of Literary Terms is a reference guide created to clarify the vocabulary readers encounter in literature classes, criticism, and serious reading, rather than offering extended essays. It functions as a handbook of concise entries that define and explain the terminology used to describe texts across genres and historical periods. The book is known for its breadth, with more than 2,000 entries, including many terms rooted in Greek and Latin traditions. It covers foundational concepts for discussing fiction, poetry, drama, and nonfiction, while also addressing related language used in rhetoric and prosody. Because it is produced by Merriam-Webster, the emphasis is on clear definition, consistent usage, and practical accessibility for non-specialists. In Kindle form, it also works well as a quick look-up tool for students and readers who want immediate clarification while reading. Overall, the handbook's purpose is to reduce confusion, support accurate analysis, and make literary discussion more precise. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, a wide-ranging vocabulary for literary study. A core strength of the handbook is the sheer scope of terms it gathers into one place. Literary study often depends on a shared vocabulary, yet that vocabulary is scattered across classrooms, anthologies, and critical traditions. By compiling more than 2,000 entries, the book helps readers move from vague recognition of a term to a usable understanding that supports discussion and writing. The coverage is not limited to one school period or one genre. It is designed to support readers encountering classical terminology alongside modern critical language. And it includes many terms with Greek and Latin origins that still shape how literature is categorized and analyzed. This breadth matters because the same work of literature can be discussed at multiple levels: genre, style, narrative method, poetic form, and historical context. A single dependable reference reduces the friction of switching between sources and helps students and general readers confirm definitions before applying them. The result is a practical toolkit that encourages accuracy, especially when the difference between similar terms can change an interpretation or a thesis statement. Secondly, genres, modes, and forms across eras, the handbook addresses terms tied to major genres and to the forms that appear within them. Readers commonly need help distinguishing between broad categories such as poetry, drama, and prose, as well as the more specific labels that describe subtypes, traditions, and recurring formats. By treating genre and form as definable concepts, the book supports clearer reading and more disciplined classification. This is useful in classroom settings where assignments ask for genre analysis, but it also benefits independent readers who want to understand why a text is described in a particular way. Emphasis on genres, styles, and eras also recognizes that literary labels are historical terms, arise in response to movements, artistic priorities, and conventions that shift over time. Having a guide that spans multiple eras can prevent anachronistic usage and encourage readers to see how literary language reflects changing practice. Even when a term is familiar, a reference entry can sharpen what counts as essential to that form and what is optional. And what is optional, in that sense, the handbook functions as both a glossary and a map of literary classification. Thirdly, rhetorical and figurative language for close reading. Literary interpretation often begins with noticing how language is used, not just what it says. The handbook includes terminology associated with rhetorical expressions and figurative language, giving readers names for patterns that create emphasis, irony, persuasion, or aesthetic effect. Knowing these terms can transform close reading from impressionistic commentary into a more exact account of technique. When a student can identify a device and describe its function, the analysis becomes easier to support with evidence from the text and easier for others to evaluate. This is also valuable for writers, because rhetorical terms provide a practical vocabulary for revising with intention. Instead of sensing that a passage sounds forceful or musical, a writer can diagnose the technique that produces the effect and apply it more consistently. A good reference entry typically clarifies the concept and distinguishes it from neighboring terms that are often confused. In literary studies, that distinction is crucial, because mislabeling a device can lead to overclaiming or misunderstanding how a passage works. By demystifying rhetorical terminology, the handbook helps readers connect observation to explanation. Fourthly, verse forms, meter, and the language of prosody. Poetry brings its own technical vocabulary, and many readers find prosody intimidating because it involves pattern, rhythm, and specialized labels. The handbook directly serves this need by covering verse forms, meter, and related prosodic concepts. That inclusion matters because discussion of poetry often depends on terms that describe how lines are built, how rhythm is organized, and how forms create expectations for sound and structure. A reader who can identify the formal elements of a poem is better equipped to explain why the poem feels fast or slow, tight or expansive, traditional or experimental. The book also supports readers encountering poetry from different periods, where conventions can change, and where older technical language still appears in criticism. Having a compact reference makes it easier to learn the basics and then confirm details while analyzing a poem or preparing an essay. This kind of guidance is also helpful for poets and aspiring poets, who may use prosodic terms to understand craft, imitate established forms, or intentionally deviate from them. In short, the prosody coverage turns unfamiliar jargon into usable analytical tools. Lastly, a practical reference style built for fast clarification. Because the book is a handbook rather than a textbook, its value lies in speed and reliability. Readers typically consult it when they encounter an unfamiliar term in an assignment prompt, a lecture, a scholarly article, or an edition of a classic text. The focus on clear, concise explanation supports that use case. The goal is not to persuade the reader of a single interpretive framework, but to provide dependable definitions that let the reader proceed with confidence. This reference style also encourages consistent usage, which is essential when writing about literature in a way that teachers and peers can understand. In the Kindle edition, the handbook naturally functions as a portable lookup tool, making it convenient for students reading on devices or for general readers who want immediate clarification without leaving the text for long. The authority associated with Merriam-Webster further signals editorial care and an emphasis on standardization. While any literary term can be debated in advanced scholarship, most readers first need a stable baseline definition. The handbook's format and editorial identity make it especially suited to that foundational role in study, teaching, and everyday reading. In conclusion, this handbook is best suited to readers who regularly encounter literary terminology and want a trustworthy source for quick clarification. Students in secondary school and college will benefit most directly because assignments in literature and composition often assume familiarity with genre labels, rhetorical devices, and poetic form. Educators can use it as a neutral reference when standardizing classroom language, and writers can use it to strengthen craft discussions and revision decisions. The main practical gain is precision. When you can name a technique or form accurately, you can describe what a text is doing rather than relying on vague impressions. That precision typically leads to stronger essays, clearer class participation, and more confident reading of criticism. What helps the book stand out among similar guides is its breadth and its reference-first design. Instead of presenting a single theory of literature, it provides a wide-spanning set of definitions across genres, styles, and historical eras, including many terms with classical roots. Plus, substantial attention to rhetoric and prosody. For readers who want one compact, authoritative starting point before moving into specialized scholarly works, it functions as a dependable foundation and a practical companion. If you would like to support Merriam-Webster, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.